It is a curiosity of politics at the moment in South Africa that the ANC is passing legislation that just won't do anything, you know, that just doesn't work, that is dead on arrival. And you have to ask yourself, why is it bothering to pass this legislation? Mark, good morning. How are you?
I'm very well. I was listening the other day to a song by Leonard Cohen, which is about there's a crack in everything, that's how the light gets in. I don't know if you heard that song.
Well, Leonard is obviously, we're related. So, you know, obviously I take notice in the work that he puts out.
So if it's true, the cracks are where the light comes in, then there must be a bright light shining in the GNU. Okay, yeah, this is where we go. You say, Tim, your take on the glue in the GNU, I've got some thoughts about it. I think we are in the most challenging position we've been with regard to unity ever so far. Your thoughts?
You know, it's very intriguing. What's happened is that John Steenhuisen and the leader of the DA has asked for a reset. And the reason he's done it is because the ANC has just blundered ahead. As though, you know, nothing has changed. And passed a whole bunch of legislation that, you know, that they know the DA and DA supporters are absolutely going to hate. So there was a little bit of flexibility around about the Bella bill. This is about the education, but there was no flexibility about the NHI and about the expropriation bill. So now the DA is pissed off. Right. Very understandably, I would say. The question is, what are they going to do about it? And what does the ANC think that the DA is going to do about it? And what does the DA think the ANC is going to do about it? You know what I mean? We are at that point of just testing each other's boundaries. And this is a tense moment that could go very badly, very quickly.
Don't you think? You know, it seems to me, I mean, there's the Post Office Amendment Bill. All sorts of, it seems to me it's bill signing season all over the world, okay? So those who are empowered to sign bills are doing so rapidly, okay?
There is.
Now, the USA is certainly no exception to that observation. And so, you know, what is the purpose? And what's the driver, okay? One of the drivers I might suggest is the maintenance of power. I might suggest that the signature of all of these bills urgently is a requirement for retaining power. It is satisfying an internal audience, not a country.
Oh, that's a good point.
As a first observation.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so I think it's like, okay, you there, if you want to stay there, start signing some things that we want. Okay.
Right.
And so it's driven, I think, by party politics as much as it's driven by national interest. And that's a very worrying and repeating, you know, notion that we have to deal with here in South Africa. And so, you know, I did listen a bit to the debate on the expropriation bill, and it seems there's more than one debate. There's, you know, 1975 bill was wrong, needed revision, but the new bill, you know, seems to have built-in contradictions. And, it depends on who you listen to. And I accept that we need to move away from the previouses, if you like.
Right.
But we need to move towards something which has its foundation in common interest. And I would argue that the disparate value systems that prevail inside the GNU are not fertile ground for seeking intersecting common interest. And I think that is the nub of it. And now, what do you do when you're in a place where you've been beaten up? What do you do? Do you leave or do you stay and fight?
Yes. This is the question. So what Steenhuisen and the DA have done is they've tried to put the ANC on notice. And the ANC's response to that has been, well, all of this legislation was passed in the previous administration.
Mm-hmm.
This is not
key point.
New legislation that is coming up for the GNU to discuss. And the DA knew that. The problem is that, well, of course the DA knew that. But isn't it disingenuous to pretend that nothing has changed from the situation in which you were the majority party to the situation in which you are a minority party? I mean, it is a curiosity of politics at the moment in South Africa that the ANC is passing legislation that just won't do anything, you know, that just doesn't work, that is dead on arrival. It's just not going to work, you know, and you have to ask yourself, why is it bothering to pass this legislation that even itself knows, you know, cannot possibly function? For example, you know, the expropriation bills are, you know, if you hear the sound of the expropriation bill, it suggests that this is a dramatic new thing which is going to change land ownership in South Africa dramatically. It's going to, and what's more, the government will be able to expropriate property without paying a cent. And it's just going to reverse the 1913 Land Act. Huzzah, we are winners here. But if you read the bill itself, it doesn't come even close to suggesting that. It's ring-fenced with a thousand of, you know, it's just not going to happen. Not in that way. You know, it might happen a little bit on the...
And so one might argue that the practical implementation of these political gestures, and I'm being that demeaning of them, because I think that, you know, we have a situation now where popularity seems to trump purpose, okay? And if that is what's guiding you as a leader, then you are bound to get to the lowest common denominator.
Right.
I mean, that is, you're not going to get to the highest common factor that will drive growth and drive, you know, the general society. You are going to start worshipping numbers like the increase in the grant system, like the less and less valuable qualifications, like, you know, more and more availability of lower and lower quality.
Yeah.
And so these things are all what are driven by the absence of intersecting value systems. Okay. And so you have to take a step back and stop focusing on one another, which I think is all that seems to be happening in our politics. It's the DA versus the ANC versus the MK versus the EFF, versus whoever's got the mic spends most of their time arguing for their case and against the case of the others. Nobody argues the case.
Yes. Exactly.
And that's where I think we're finding ourselves going wrong. The noise is all about each other, not about the focal point.
There is. I mean, there is also, you know, in the expropriation bill, there's another sort of curiosity about it. A lot of liberal South Africans say that people shouldn't panic about the expropriation bill, precisely because it has all of those checks and balances that I was talking about previously.
Yeah.
And because it has all of those checks and balances, the DA is going to take it to the Constitutional Court. But my guess is the Constitutional Court is going to say it's fine, because the challenge against the bill is that it's contrary to the Constitution. But the bill itself, I mean, it's hard to reach that conclusion. The problem is much larger and much more philosophical. And that is that the bill concentrates on taking property away from people. It doesn't concentrate on how the property gets distributed. And that's the problem. Mm. The problem is not the, you know, the lack of land to distribute in South Africa. The problem is, what are the distribution mechanisms? What effective distribution mechanisms do you have available to make the land ownership, you know, balance in South Africa resemble the population? And you know, there's absolutely no, you know, concentration on that topic in the expropriation bill, which comes back to this thing about being gesture, the politics of gestures. You know, the politics of, you know, showboating.
At the risk of displaying my ignorance, I mean, you know, even the basic negotiation of the GNU, I didn't observe the participation by deal-making expertise. I, you know, it was politicians arguing with politicians. And, you know, I would be, you know, cautiously brave to say that the solution to South Africa as it stands is going to have to involve deep common purpose expertise, which is politically agnostic in its gathering. Okay.
Yes.
And we've had enough of political gatherings and we've had enough of slogans and t-shirts and all of those kinds of things. We now need to all face the table instead of looking at each other over the table. And I mean, I think that's the fundamental flaw, is that we've had a battle for power, not a battle for success. Our very motto is grounded in, you know, the diversity of people uniting. Hey?
Isn't that just politics? I mean, where in the world does politics operate in this, you know, in a sort of completely functional way?
In very isolated circumstances, now and again, a politician hires an expert. Like Peru did for education, or like, you know, they hire someone who's fundamentally sound in their ability to construct long-term successful projects. And they always seem to work better. And so let that be the function of the political mandate, which is the popular mandate, is your mandate is to hire the best people for the job, not to stay in power. And until we cross that bridge, it's not even worth entering in the debate, because you are cross purposes. If your purpose is to stay in power and my purpose is to fix Johannesburg, we will not find common ground.
Good.
And so, you know, maybe the only thing that will rescue us is an existential crisis, which is so pervasive that only fools would not unite. There's a bit of a spring morning thing for you. Autumn must be approaching.
Behind all of this is a calculus that the different parties are going through. So, you know, I did speak to somebody who was actually kind of slightly in the know yesterday.
Kind of slightly. You're a brave man, too. Yeah.
So my question was, how likely is it that all of this is going to fall, you know, going to disintegrate? And the calculus for the DA is basically, if they pull out of the GNU, what does that do? Does that throw the ANC into the arms of the EFF? The EFF is currently struggling. It's losing its sort of like major members. Does the EFF look at this as an opportunity to recast itself as part of the government and accept with open arms the ANC's, you know, offer for it to enter the government of national unity? I think it does. I think the likelihood is higher. So, you know, that leaves the DA in a little bit of a pickle, because they've got one trump card, they can only play it once. Is now the time to play the trump card? And the answer to that is probably not.
If I was a betting man, we'll get to betting. Betting seems to be the new game in town. But if I was a betting man, I would say it's just too comfortable in the house for anyone to be brave or principled enough to leave the house. Okay, now that's a bit of a statement. But you know, I think there's a lot of people that want to be in government, that want to be a minister, that want to be in charge. Yes. And that is the prevailing wind. I'm not, of course, there's some obvious and beautiful exceptions to that rule. But for the most part, if your prosperity is driven by your title rather than the outcomes that you can produce or the problems that you can solve, then the title becomes sacrosanct and it is more important to stay in the house than go out. And so I think that is going to be the force that prevails.
Yes.
They're not going to break up. They can't break up. No matter if you're in a home where one of the participants is being beaten up occasionally, it still seems better to stay in the house. You know, I mean, it's insanity manifest. Okay.
Well, not if you think, you know, your supporters are going to desert you.
Yeah.
That's true of both sides.
Yeah.
But can I just say that there is a remarkable irony here, because do you know what year it is or what year it's about to become?
Well, you know, when last I checked, it was 2025, and I've spoken about what a fabulous number that is. But no, Jim, I can't wait for what you're going to tell us. I can't actually wait.
So no, I just want to say Happy New Year, Mark, and I hope that your new year is happy. It doesn't sound like it's going all that well.
Not going that well. So what happens tomorrow, Jim? Enlighten us.
It's the Chinese Lunar New Year.
Ah.
And the animal that we are talking about here is the snake. We are moving into the year of the snake. And what does that mean?
The year of the snake.
It's actually, now it doesn't sound great, but it is theoretically a great year for harvest, procreation, spirituality, good fortune, cunning, evil, threats, and terror.
Oh my goodness. You know, Tim, I've never, you know, this and star signs and all of these kinds of things, I've never met one.
Right.
Or a description of your stars foretell that you couldn't interpret to your advantage. Okay, so no matter what you do, you go, oh, yeah, that's good for me.
Oh, snake. Yeah, great.
Snake. I love snakes.
Okay. Love snakes.
All right, and it doesn't mean, it's meaningless. This year, I mean, I was born in a year of the monkey, I think, in Chinese signs. Yeah. So we don't like snakes, we monkeys. Okay. Anyway, and what does that bode well for us? What does that say? What is going to happen in China? Tell me.
Well, here's the thing. How many trips do you think Chinese people are going to make in Chinese New Year?
A lot.
So this I find very hard to believe, but you know, I'm reading from the internet, so the answer is around about 5 billion trips, which doesn't seem logical. Except that if you think about it, one of the things about Chinese New Year is that you have to, of course, visit your parents, and then you've also got to go on holiday because this is your 1 week off in the year.
Yeah.
So this is, you know, 1 billion people going there and back and then to somebody else and back, but then that still only gets you to 4 billion.
The trip to find is one outside of the country or where you leave home?
No, when you leave home, when you go somewhere else. Yeah, exactly. Well,
Are we talking about, we're talking about physical trips, not mental trips, of course.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. So, but I mean, it is a sort of remarkable thing that this is a really the most extraordinary amount of movement that's going to happen over the next week. It's just amazing. But anyway, I always like the fact that Chinese New Year happens, you know, a little bit after calendar New Year, because it means that, you know, all of your New Year's resolutions actually only start a month later than you originally made them.
We are giving the Chinese New Year too much time. Okay. They have an opportunity to catch up.
All right, let's talk about something different. What do you make of the American president's first week in office?
Busy. Busy would be the word that comes to mind. And I might add to that, a little recklessly busy. That would be how I would describe it.
Yes. No.
And again, driven by populism, although it's, you know, it's a very narrowly defined source of populism.
Can I ask a serious question about the US?
Yeah.
And that is, you know, there's this effort to reduce the size of the American state.
Yeah.
By, you know, Elon Musk is now part of this thing called Doge.
You mean Deputy President Elon Musk?
Do you think this is going to work or not?
It runs against populism, but it has virtue. So I haven't got a clue whether it's going to work. I don't know the extent of its impact. But that you should have a smaller state that is more effective, I would have argued is common cause, in as much as it produces, you know, more economic output, and that results in more tax, and so you get a higher return on the people employed. You know, if I were to venture an original theory on this, on this debate, you know, that would be my answer. It drives return on human capital, and therefore that's got to be a good thing. Although technology, Tim, you know, let me ask you this.
Yes.
Is AI taking over the world?
Yes. I think it's...
Is AI part of that?
Yes, I think it is. I think there is a new mood, and just not only in the US, but around the world. I think people are just a bit pissed off with the size of government, with how intrusive government is.
Yeah.
So I don't know whether that's my prejudice or whether that's, you know, that's true for the...
Well, it's a heightened awareness, at least.
Yes, exactly.
Having come through the biggest set of elections ever, it's very much a heightened awareness. Everyone's had elections, and so it's front of mind, I guess. Yeah.
And, you know, I think it's quite a good thing. You know, this is kind of remarkable. The most extreme example, of course, is Argentina. And five government departments have been excised. But, you know, that's extraordinary enough. But what is even more extraordinary is that the Milei, the head of state, is more popular than he's ever been. You know, I don't think any stage of history has a politician become more popular for reducing the size of the state. Normally, politicians think, well, in order to become more popular, what I need is more, you know, sort of government programs that do stuff for people, and then I'll become more popular. It's just an interesting moment, I think.
Talking about doing good stuff, is Transnet on the way back? I mean, is Transnet starting to look like a game?
Its results, just most recent results, which came out after Christmas, were worse.
No, but the government seems to be ready to do an Eskom on Transnet. Eh? It's ready to hoist some capital.
Yeah,
and would that be misguided, or is it eventually starting to get some believable, virtuous momentum? I don't know. Maybe next week we'll have to talk about that.
Yeah. Let's put a peg in it, because this is a sort of unfolding drama. I mean, the ANC does want to do to Transnet what it did to Eskom, which is throw enormous, enormous amounts of money at it. But actually, you know, that's not what fixed Eskom. But anyway.
No, people fix things and break things. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. All right, Marcus.
All righty.